Hi, I'm Steve Engelberg, Editor-in-Chief of ProPublica. Welcome to the podcast. We're here today with Mike Webb, ProPublica's Vice President for Communications, and a very important man in the ProPublica operation. As most of you know, of course, we at ProPublica don't have any print product. There's no newspaper, there's no presses, there's no magazines, there's no four-color layout. So what we do every day with our stories is get them out to the world through the internet and through the work of somebody like Mike, who goes out and tries to get attention for ProPublica stories. Not an easy job. So we thought we might talk today with Mike about what it's like to publish, to be, in essence, the printing press of the internet era. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Steve.
Let's start a little bit with your training for this job, because you have a quite unusual background for somebody working in the communications era. You were once in music.
Yeah, I used to be in the music business working for Columbia Records.
So what'd you do in the music business?
I was an assistant in the A&R department for most of my time there, and I worked with Steve Berkowitz and Faith Newman. Steve signed Jeff Buckley, who released the excellent album Grace, and Faith signed Nas, who released the excellent and classic album Illmatic.
So, but A&R, it's a little bit difficult, isn't it, in the world of music? You've got these artists like Jeff Buckley who are very talented, very interesting, original, and you're trying to get them to a larger public. Why is that so difficult?
Because it's hard to anticipate the audience's taste. So you never know if artists are really going to connect with the audience in a significant way. And you have to sell records.
Right.
You know, if you're going to have a career, you've got to be able to get people to buy your albums.
So you got to have a feel for what people like.
Yes. Yeah. You definitely have to have a sensibility for what anticipating that curve of where people are going to be.
Now, you yourself are also a musician. I understand you've been in several bands. You want to mention any of their names?
I used to be in a band called Spitball. We headlined CBGBs a few times.
For those of you not in New York, that's a famous punk club, which is now a clothing store.
And I used to be in a band, most recently, in a band called The Transplendent.
Transplendent. And you're a bass player, right?
I was a bass player in Spitball and guitar player in The Transplendent.
And then from there, you did some work in politics. You were on Bill Bradley's presidential campaign and worked at The Nation magazine for about 3 years on publicity and syndication. Now, that job, I suppose, was probably your first exposure to journalists. Moving from the music world into the world of journalism, what was the difference? What felt different to you?
The music business is a lot more frivolous. You know, you can actually earn a reputation by being kind of crazy, and the more ridiculous things you do, the more famous you might become. Whereas in politics, you want to be considered a serious person who knows policy and actually gets ideas across. And then in journalism, it's a lot more exacting, because then it becomes about being specific in reporting what happened, and it has to be accurate and it has to be right. So it's a little different that way.
But you're still on some level, right, trying to get people to pay attention to something that they may not know about or want to pay attention to.
Yeah. So in my job doing PR, it's definitely about finding the outlet that will help let people know that this is something important, this is something that matters to their lives, something that they should pay attention to.
Now, we should explain to our listeners that at ProPublica, we take a very broad view of the kind of partners we have. We work with local newspapers, local radio, national television, 60 Minutes, New York Times, Washington Post, you name it, The Guardian. We sort of look at the entire universe of media and dream about where our stories can have the most impact. So what's a typical day like for you? So the ProPublica has a big story coming out. What do you do?
Well, right now we're working on the Tylenol story. And what we've spent the past week doing is sort of trying to set that up and figure out, how do we launch the story? What show do we try and get T. Christian Miller on to talk about it and to help them understand what the key points of the story are and why this story is really an important piece, an important ProPublica piece. So we'll send emails to producers of shows like The Today Show or Good Morning America. We give them the background on the story and see if they want to have him on. So we're reaching out to major TV shows, we're reaching out to radio shows. And then once the story goes up on Friday, then we start to reach out to websites and other reporters. We'll reach out to the business press, reach out to the medical press, just people who we think will be interested and will help us spread the story and help it reach an audience.
Now, as a guy who started out using a manual typewriter, I'm of a certain age, and certainly back in the day when I started, reporters didn't go anywhere to talk about their stories. It was almost kind of forbidden. So How does that work now? I mean, is that an essential part of the business?
It's standard part of the process. I mean, the dream scenario is you get them on, say, a Rich Omata or Bill O'Reilly. They can explain the piece to people. And then that creates kind of even more of a reaction because people are interested. They might come to your website to read it. Or, you know, if they're truly outraged, they could call their congressman and demand action.
Well, now that's interesting because right in the old days, you had a moment of publication when the paper landed on the doorstep and that was the end of it. But on the web, of course, publication is continuous. You're always attracting new readers. But isn't it a little bit tricky for these reporters? I mean, how do you advise them? A lot of these guys on cable television, they want conflict, they want controversy, they want the reporter maybe even to make a gaffe, say something dumb. How do you help prepare people for that experience, given that not all these guys are used to being in the limelight?
We definitely don't want a gaffe or controversy. Our stories don't tend to be that over the top like that. So our process is generally we'll sit down with the reporter, maybe ask some tough questions so that they're comfortable in their responses. But in general, I want the reporters to be as at ease. They're the experts. They know this stuff inside and out. We want them to just sort of be very conversational in their response. I'll ask them to sort of have three key points that they want to make and try and get those across. But we really just want to do our best to inform people and help them understand why this matters in their life.
Let's talk about some of the stories that you've been involved with here at ProPublica, because you've been with us for 5 years, and you've therefore seen almost every major story we've ever tried.
I've been here since the second story was published.
So what were some of your favorites? What were some of the stories you found most easy to sort of get attention for?
Most easy? Well, we did an NSA story a couple of weeks ago, and that was easy because everyone already had some background on the what was going on with the NSA. Other stories would be things that, like Dollars for Docs, that's been easy because people, it's a great project. You type in your doctor's name and you can see how much money they're taking from pharmaceutical companies. So everyone has a doctor and everyone wants to type in their doctor's name to see, you know, what they're getting. So the easy ones aren't the fun ones.
Well, let's talk about the fun ones then.
I think the story that I'm most proud to have worked on, I think, is the fracking series. And that's because it started at zero. No one knew what fracking was when we first published that story. But we slowly built an audience for it. And what we did was, the first story was published in the Albany Times Union. It got in front of the state legislature and obviously Governor Patterson. And he actually acted on it. He decided not to let fracking happen unabated. And he held back some legislation. So that's a story that had impact right away. But we continued to build from there. So we were able to get the environmental community involved. We were able to get various bloggers involved. From there, you would see the NPR would begin to invite people on. I remember at one point, the New York Times and NPR began to do their own stories. And I got upset. I'm saying, hey, we were here first. Give us the right credit. But I remember Paul Steiger came along and he said, Mike, it's a victory. They're reporting, they're helping us spread this story and help people understand why it's important. So that's the one I'm really, really proud of.
So, Mike, are there some other stories that you found particularly moving or exciting to have been part of over these last few years?
Well, it feels kind of generic to say this, but I thought the story that won a Pulitzer Prize, our first one, which was The Deadly Choices at Memorial, that's an amazing story. And the thing I loved about that story is that as a reader, Sherry put you in the position of being the judge.
That would be Sherry Fink.
Yeah. You got to decide whether what the doctors did was right or wrong. And she did such a great job of setting the situation. Because off the top of my head, you say, well, doctors murdered patients. And off the top of my head, you would say, no, that's horrible. But when you understand the conditions they were in and what they were going through, you wonder whether what they did was right or wrong.
Well, that was an exceptionally subtle story, and on some level, I think trying to pitch that story must have been challenging because it wasn't at all something you could reduce to a soundbite. The beauty of the story was the texture and the depth of it.
Yeah, exactly. And it that was a story that you did need a little time to help people understand. But I think we had the anniversary of Katrina as a hook, so people were looking for something, and that made it a lot easier. But another one I liked was Magnetar, and that's kind of funny, and I don't mean to pick the ones that won Pulitzers, but I like Magnetar because I remember early on when we started doing some of the reporting on the financial crisis, I was lost. I don't read business pages. I don't care about finance in my personal life.
Now, I should say, as one of the editors on that coverage, that's a very sort of sobering and depressing thing to hear that an intelligent reader found our coverage completely incomprehensible. But I don't blame him, because we struggled with this. And just to remind our listeners, the Magnetar story was about a hedge fund that ultimately created these very complicated financial instruments and then bet against them to make a lot of money.
Right. But I'm not saying our coverage was bad. It actually helped me understand these things, and it helped me understand how they manipulated the market in their favor. So these were things I never understood or cared about. And in reading the stories, I found myself caring and wanting to know more. So I was always kind of pleased that I felt capable of even understanding high finance issues.
Well, of course, that's our goal, I think, in that coverage and in many other coverages, which is to take things that are viewed as too complicated, too hard, and inscrutable, and turn them into something that, first of all, you can understand, and second of all, that you might actually have a viewpoint on.
Yeah.
We hope that people who read that coverage drew some conclusions about who was responsible for some of the things that happened to this country.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how this, and we are here at ProPublica, a new kind of newsroom. You know, in the newsrooms that I grew up in, I was a reporter and later editor at the New York Times, the person who had your function would be on another floor. You know, it's somebody you might send an email to. You might not even know that person. How do you interact with the staff here, and how is that different?
I think I'm involved from the at a very early stage, and I've been very good, close personal friends with Scott Klein, our senior editor of news applications. And so Scott will clue me in on what we're doing, what some of the background elements for any type of story is. And that really helps me start to think about how we can sell this story, or at least help people understand it. I'd like to think I've developed good relationships with the reporters. So I can go out to lunch with them and sort of talk about, what are you working on? Who are we trying to reach? Who's the impact target? I feel like I'm involved at a pretty close level as the reporting is going along, and then especially right before we publish.
Now, that word impact you use is an important one here at ProPublica. It's worth reminding people that our model is essentially to publish stories that bring change. How does that affect how you think about where you might want to place a story? Because, you know, in other lines of work, people are looking for hits, so obviously the most hits, the most sort of buzz on the site, the better. But I would assume that when you're looking for impact, you might have a different thought process.
Yeah, we want to try and reach a news program or a website or a radio show that reaches as many people as possible. So we're looking for the morning editions, All Things Considered. You're looking for the Today Show, Good Morning America. You're looking for the Huffington Post or Drudge Report. You just want those websites that reach millions of people, and they will instantly help you spread the story. But the goal of doing that is you want the person who has power to fix the things that we're writing about, you want to reach them. So by reaching the Drudge Report or Huffington Post, it's easy to forward that, to tweet it, to do something to let people know this story's out there. And then inevitably, someone who's in power is going to come across it. Their staff will come across it. And they'll go, you know what? This is silly. We can fix this. Let's do it.
Over the 5 years that you've been doing this, and obviously ProPublica has grown as an organization, but the media landscape has shifted too. You know, we now have the Washington Post owned by Jeff Bezos. I think when you started, Twitter barely existed. What changes do you perceive from where you're sitting, and how stories get out, and how your own work has shifted over this time?
That's a good question. Definitely, Twitter has been a major factor for us, because it's such an easy way to share a story that you think is good or important with someone. You can read our story and you simply hit click and boom, the story's out there. But I think the type of stories we do just are things that people don't know, and there's always kind of a, wow, I didn't know that. Can you believe this? So you'll post it on Facebook, or you'll email it to a friend, or you'll do something to spread it. And I think social media has really, that's probably the biggest difference now, is you have a community of friends on Facebook and they're likely going to share values with you. So when you see that story, you post it, and then your friend might read it, and then they might pass it along. And it makes it so much easier to spread stories where to the people that really need and want to see them.
Well, Mike, I'd like to share with our listeners here at the Storage Closet podcast that for the last 5 years, you have been the unofficial, uncredited producer of this broadcast. And I'd like to share with our readers that we're going to miss you because Mike is headed out to a new and exciting next chapter of his life in Hawaii. And I hope that you will be watching us from afar.
I'm signing up for the daily email, the major investigations, and I encourage all of our listeners to do that as well.
And of course, our Twitter feed.
I can't stop selling ProPublica.
Mike, aloha, and thank you.
Thank you, Steve.